Welcome to the Blue Stocking Circle podcast, Lady Nerds on Popular Culture. We're your hosts, B,
Griselle,
and Ashley. This is Minisode 3.5, Feedback, Favorites, and First Impressions. Our first item is a very important announcement. We are now on Apple Podcasts and Google Play Music.
Yay!
Please rate, review, and subscribe to help us grow. In other news, if you follow us on social media, you know we held a Shepherdess contest to celebrate the release of our 10th Kingdom episode. Thanks to everyone who participated and voted. The results are in, and the winner was Griselle with her song Sheep Thrills to the tune of Sia's Cheap Thrills. Congratulations, Griselle. Now, if you excuse me, I have to go destroy a magic well in a fit of rage. So, before we move on to feedback, are there any of our now standard confessions? And I'm looking in your direction, Griselle.
So, I do have a confession. After all of my protests about the 10th Kingdom, I did go out and buy the Blu-ray so that I can watch it in the full glory of HD and widescreen.
Also, can I confess that I still don't really ever want to see it again?
That's a valid confession. All right. I have a confession too, actually. After we submitted our podcast to the iTunes and Google Play directories, I started vanity Googling us to see if we would show up if you look for the works that we've covered so far. And we do show up, so again, please rate, review, and or subscribe. But while I was doing so, I discovered two other 10th Kingdom related episodes. The first is by the Ruin My Life podcast, which in one of those Life is Stranger Than Fiction moments they made around the same time as us. Their conversation was great, so I wanted to give them a shout out here. And if they ever listen to us, you guys should know we are 110% in on your idea for a prestige TV version of the 10th Kingdom. Well, two-thirds of us are, but we're very supportive. The other podcast I found was a 2008 interview with Simon Moore, the 10th Kingdom's writer, on the Writing Show podcast. It was half about the 10th Kingdom and half about his Traffic series, and on the whole, it was an excellent interview. He provided interesting information on the unlikely inspiration for the 10th Kingdom, as well as other tidbits about the series, and he also spoke about writing in general, and specifically about pitching ideas to television and movie studios, as well as on Hollywood's refusal to feature female heroines and how it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. I highly recommend the episode if you're either a fan of the 10th Kingdom or interested in writing for television, and we will include links to both of these episodes in our show notes. So I think we have another group confession, and that's that the 10th Kingdom episode was 90 minutes long, and obviously we didn't want to have an hour and a half long episode, so we had to cut out half of our conversation. If you didn't notice, you're welcome. But there's a lot of things that we didn't get to mention on that episode that we thought we could follow up here on this minisode. And Ashley, you wanted to talk about one in particular?
Yeah, one of the biggest things that we had talked about and I think is important to bring up is the fact that in the production of the 10th Kingdom, most, if not, I think maybe all of the major roles were men. We had talked about how having an all-male production crew and creative team can affect how the female characters are portrayed in, you know, in TV and media. And B brought up a point that I didn't know because I haven't actually read the novelization, that the novelization is written by a woman. And in the book, a lot of what we saw as problematic issues with it, issues of like consent in Kissing Town, stuff like that, is either completely removed or is written from Virginia's point of view so that you get where she's coming from. So there's not, it's not as much the male gaze and we're trying to figure out what she means or what she was doing or what influence she was under. She tells us herself. So I thought that was an interesting point to bring up, you know, the whole idea of men versus women and writing female characters and how it's important to have that kind of female voice on a production team because look how different the miniseries was versus the book.
So I'm curious. In the novelization, is Virginia the narrator, or is it multiple narratives?
No, it's basically a third-person limited that rotates, so you don't actually get their first-person perspective, but you get to go inside the heads of each character one at a time. Everyone from Virginia and Wolf and Tony to the Evil Queen and the Trollkeen, even. So you get to see what they're all thinking as these events happen. And Ashley, to your point, I was mentioning that the book makes a very clear distinction between her behavior when she's wearing the magic shoes, which she has no idea what she's doing. She's basically described as being drunk the whole time. As opposed to Kissing Town, where the book explicitly states she's in control of her actions, she knows exactly what she's doing, and she knows exactly what Wolf is doing, and she's responding intentionally to his behaviors. So I thought that was an interesting point. The book is co-authored by a woman, Christine Catherine Rush, who writes in collaboration with Dean Wesley Smith under the pen name Catherine Wesley. I love this book. I've read this book many more times than I've seen the miniseries, just because for years that's all I had. I didn't have the DVDs, I only had the book. So I very strongly recommend this book, especially if you want to get that female perspective on these characters that Ashley's just been mentioning.
That might be my homework then for this long weekend, just to find, track it down and read it, because I think I might like that a little bit better than the miniseries.
Right, so any final thoughts before we move on from the 10th Kingdom forever?
I think we're good.
I have one. I love that golden retriever.
He was maybe the best actor.
Yes, I would agree with that. And it occurred to me that since it's been 17 years since this movie was released, he's probably no longer alive. So I just wanted to say, rest in peace, puppy.
I think we need a dirge.
Okay, so I think now we can move on. Since we just completed a work in which food and restaurants play such important roles in the characters' lives, and we will soon be celebrating a holiday ourselves centered around a massive meal, namely American Thanksgiving, I thought it was only appropriate that this time our favorite segment focus on food.
I love when there's food.
We all love when there's food.
So my question for you is, which fictional meal is your favorite, Griselle?
Okay, so it took me a while to come up with this, and I had to think about it very hard, because the obvious choice for me, it would be a Hogwarts, like, Christmas dinner or something. But I wanted to come up with something else. And after thinking about it, I remembered Return to Oz and how much I always wanted to try Dorothy's lunch pail tree box thing. So if you've never seen Return to Oz, when Dorothy first arrives in Oz, she's with her chicken Belina. And she's hungry. She comes across this tree that has these things that almost look like strawberries hanging from it. But they're lunch pails. And they have ham sandwiches inside. I have always wanted to try Dorothy's lunch pail ham sandwich.
I was going to say, at the beginning of your banquet at Hogwarts, because number one, obviously, Hogwarts. And number two, it's kind of a cheat because you can get essentially anything you want. So I don't have to pick any one thing. I can just say, I want to sit here for the meal. So that was my original answer. And then since you guys kind of, you know, snuck in and said it before me, I'll do an additional one and say that if there was one fictional food item that I've always wanted to try, it would be the Turkish delight that Edmund is given, the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, because I've had the real life version. It's okay, it's good, it's sugar, I love sugar, but it is in no way good enough to justify betraying your siblings, no matter how annoying they may be. So I really want to taste what enchantment is going on, because just the fact that he ate it and was over the moon for her, there had to be magic, and I really want to know what it was.
Real Turkish delight is one of the great disappointments of my life.
No.
Yes, because you read the book and then you thought, yes. So I'm thinking maybe because we didn't have the book's version.
Maybe we're not evil enough to appreciate it, which is another theory. There's a book I read, I think it's called The Magician, where one of the kids also wants to try Turkish Delight. And he's like, oh, this is not a, I don't know, I don't get this. And I think it's his sister who's like, maybe you're not a villain. Maybe it's only the villains who love it. I love Turkish Delight.
I was going to say, that's a great theory, but then you popped out with that you love it. So we've got two heroes and a villain, maybe. Then, in the setup?
You're assuming I'm a hero?
You didn't like Turkish Delight. Or you're chaotic neutral.
The fictional food item I've always wanted to try is that ribbony chocolate in the beginning of the Willy Wonka movie from 1971. Do you guys know what I'm talking about?
Definitely.
We'll put it in the show notes. I'm a major chocoholic, and I think that can be traced back to that very introduction. But as for a full meal, I would like to join one of the Crawley dinners from Downton Abbey, and I would want to sit right near Lady Violet so I can hear every scathing witticism.
You're brave. I'd be afraid to sit next to her because then I think she'd want to, you know, correct me, my table manners or something. I wouldn't be able to enjoy the food.
I'll risk it.
Fair.
Let's move on to our first impressions, wherein our newbie, this time B, is going to tell us what she thinks our next title, Persuasion by Jane Austen, is about.
Full disclosure, I've seen the Persuasion adaptations about a decade ago now, so I was only half a newbie when you met me. Even if I hadn't seen that though, it's Jane Austen, so I would feel pretty confident stating the protagonist is, after a series of misunderstandings, going to marry a rich guy and live in a big house. I think that in this particular story, the misunderstanding is that she turned down his proposal because her family convinced her to, then she regrets it for years, and then they meet again after a long time, and yearning ensues. I don't remember many of the details from the adaptations, except that someone falls from a wall by the sea at one point, and there was way too much running in one of them, which I'm assuming is not in the book. And based on the pitying look that you two gave me when I asked how funny this one was, I'm assuming it's deadly serious.
So it's not deadly serious.
Well, I think you've managed to boil down all the Jane Austen novels into this tiny newbie first impression.
I mean, really, yeah, I think that would work for,
that works for any of them.
Any of them, yeah, so good job.
There you go. So as part of our conversation starter, just to get things going, I thought it would be fun for us to take a quiz. And if you've been following us on social media, you'll see that generally we have two of us get the same results always, and one is the outlier. This time we are all the same person, as we have merged into one personality, and that personality is Eleanor Dashwood. We are all Eleanor Dashwood.
I think that's accurate.
I think it's accurate, too.
Especially if you read the... It was a BuzzFeed quiz, and we'll put it up, you know, online, so you guys can take it yourselves. But if you read the description, it does kind of work for all of us. It does work,
and I can only imagine that we all picked completely different choices. So I would love to do this again in real time and see what we actually picked to come up with these results. So we, you know, we're all Eleanor. Now, we also took a hero quiz, because what is a Jane Austen novel without a hero?
Nothing.
And that is where, once more, our tastes have become dissimilar. Two of us got Fitzwilliam Darcy. One of us got Edward Ferrars. Now, your challenge, dear listeners, is to guess who got who or whom. I don't know what word goes there. So we'll end it on that note. I think it's whom.
I think it's whom.
I can't remember. I'm an English major. Why don't I know these things? Join us next time on the Blue Stocking Circle podcast when we discuss Persuasion by Jane Austen. So grab yourself a copy of the book or watch one of the two adaptations, either the 1995 theatrical release or the 2005 BBC edition that came out on PBS in the US. That episode will air on December 1st. So grab yourself a pot of tea and don't fall off any walls. In the meantime, you can find us at thebluestockingcircle.com. On Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, and Tumblr at Blue Sox Circle. That's Blue SOX Circle. Or email us at thebluestockingcircle@gmail.com. And you can now also find us on Apple Podcasts and Google Play. So go download, subscribe, rate, review, give us all your love.
Cheers!
So our next episode will be...